Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is World Form Zen Fighting Champion John Chung, and you're listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneers Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Enjoy.
Aloha, everybody, and welcome to the AMAA Masters and Pioneers Radio Show. Wow, I've got a great show tonight. But before we open the show up, I'd like to bring on my producer, who's believed in the Sport Karate Museum for the past 5 years, an incredible man, Hanti Jesse Bowen. Jesse, are you there, sir?
Hello, sir. How are you doing?
Good. Tell us about some of the things you got going on. It's pretty exciting. Please?
Well, yes, sir. You know, every week we're talking about our event. You know, this is book number 6 of the series. The first 3 books were the Who's Who in the Martial Arts, and then we went to the Martial Arts Masters and Pioneers, and there were two, both series are totally different. One series was really about, you know, the champions and bringing them back together and celebrating that, and the Masters and Pioneers is really about people telling their stories and motivating people. So the whole book is about motivating people, and this past 2 years, we've had a chance to produce for the Action Martial Arts Hall of Honors, Sifu Allen Goldberg, and this year we produced the Action Martial Arts History Book. And, sir, I guess tonight is the night that we officially announced that we're going to be producing a special book for the museum. This is going to be the Sport Karate Museum. You know, working with Keith Yates, we got the cover design last week, and so right now this week we're in that process of putting the website together, and I'm hoping that next week we can go ahead and start working on this book, and I'm really excited about it. You know, we talk about the things that happened, you know, Professor Lee, you know, you and I meeting, and here we are 6 years later, and when we launched the 2016 book and didn't know you at all, didn't know anything about you. And, you know, you were one of the first two people to actually reach out and call me and wish me success and everything that we were doing. You know, we went to the radio show, and, you know, we've now established our own publishing company, and we're, you know, so we didn't realize all this was going to happen, but God has his own way of working things out for the better. So how do you feel knowing that there's going to be an official Sport Karate Museum? How do you feel about that?
Well, we've come a long way in 22 years to be able to put all these history generals together. And the neat thing about it is, Dr. Bowen, is that, you know, everybody here that we put together in these 22 years, they consider themselves all alumni. You know, we're not a Hall of Fame. We're not a bunch of high-ranking black belts. It's the people that put together sport karate in America that created it for the world. And to honor these history generals, and you can take the time to put together, along with Keith Yates and some other people I put together, God bless you for honoring these pioneers and legends. And I thank you personally and on the air about believing in this Sport Karate Museum and myself for all these years and allow me to bring these incredible people together and for people to listen to them. I mean, we've got an amazing group of people that follow us, and I appreciate that so much, with Karen Eden Herman and yourself and Golly Bum Gwen, I mean, Mrs. Bowen. You've got quite a few people that's on our network that people like to listen to, and we have a diversity of subjects, and you know, I'm so proud to be able to be a part of this group. Thank you so much.
Well, yeah, this is what we're talking about. This is the real deal of martial arts. You know, we have been able to, you know, to separate, to talk, you know, and bring things to reality. And that's the thing that, you know, someone says, what is your brand? What do you want to be known for? And I think it's for bringing substance to the martial arts. And this is what, you know, our goals are. you know, through the radio show, because we're always branding, we're always marketing, you know, we're always trying to move forward, not just do, but not just about moving the organization forward, but about moving every person that's connected to us forward. You know, this year we're honoring Grandmaster Norris. I'm super excited about that. That's going to be a really major book. You know, two people that I've talked to in the past couple of days, Victor Moore is going to be in the book. You've got James Cook. These are some guys that I really respect way back from the day, being a part of this, you know, this upcoming project. You know, and you know, this year it's going to be a really, even though we're not going to be in Vegas, this is going to be, this is a great opportunity for our organization to really make something happen. And the last thing I want to mention is that we've now, of course, we're a nonprofit now, but we've opened up our membership, and not just a membership to get people to join, but we're looking for martial artists that would like to join our organization and work. You know, they can work by writing blogs for our new website. They can work by applying training and have this training put on the website free of charge just to our members, that they can get their message out, who they are and what who they are in the martial arts, and this is my technique. What is a bow kata, tonfa kata, no matter what, if it's a kata. If you're a great speaker, hey, we want more people to do podcasts on our program. We want to provide real opportunity that can really help people grow to that next level. You know, the martial arts has changed, the world has changed. You know, so these are things we're trying to prepare ourselves for, is how do we get better during these times? And again, that we look at these times as trying as they are in the, you know, the loss of life, is that we still have to keep moving forward, and how do we move forward better? So, sir, you know, so again, you know, thank you for the opportunity for being able to work on this project, and we look forward to not just doing a job, but we really want to do a job that you would be proud of, and the people that are chosen to be featured in the book, we want it to be that there's something that they're proud to be a part of also.
Well, thank you so much for your time tonight, and we'll appreciate you taking time and sharing that with us. And before we start our show tonight, I have a very special guest. I ask every week since we've gone into the COVID-19 thing for a pastor or someone who represents the faith to bless the show and America and the History Journal. Pastor Mark Pagels, are you on the air, please? Pastor Mark Pagels.
Father, we thank you for this program. We thank you for Professor Lee and all he does. We ask that you just lift up the Sports Karate Museum and make that a success, as well as the History General and everything they're trying to do with these programs and the programs coming up. But Lord, we just ask that you guide and direct everybody. We ask that you bless our country. We pray for Professor Lee and all the guests he has on his show, that they'll reach and touch people in a way that...
Let's hear it, hopefully.
Lord, just thank you for loving us unconditionally and guiding us and directing us in all that we do. And we're going to give you the glory, the praise, and the honor. And bless this show. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
There you go.
Thank you, Pastor Pagels. I appreciate that so much. Thank you for taking time in your many busy hours of the day to give me a few minutes. Thank you so much. And please tell Sion Kiyoshi, darling, I said hello, please, okay?
I sure will. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a very special co-host tonight. We're waiting on the Wolverine. He's doing a movie called The Coward, but tonight we have a psychic who's also part of the movie. A good friend of mine, Mr. A.J. Perry. A.J.,
yes, sir.
There?
Yes, sir.
We're going to have a fun show tonight, buddy. I got some really cool people. I'm going to introduce them, and then I'll bring them on one at a time. The very first person I want to introduce is Dr. Reggie Lee, who helped invent the hologram idea that I've introduced to the world here these past few weeks. And I'll let him explain that a little bit. And then I've got a special guest that I'm really excited about bringing him on. And then he's going to introduce some other special guests I have. But first, before I do that, I want Dr. Reggie Lee to talk about his hologram and the vision of the museum. Dr. Lee?
Yes, good evening, sir. I would like to thank you for having me.
Good evening, sir. How are you, sir?
Hello? Yeah. I'd like to thank you for having me, yes, on this live broadcast. I would like to start off by saying, with our busy lives and schedules, we may not always have time to train. SetVR allows you, with the hologram, to train, allows you the flexibility to train when you want, but also where you want. If you can imagine out of work at 10 p.m. or 2 p.m., you would like to train, you can with SetVR. You're on a business trip, West Coast, Midwest, East Coast, train where you are. Take out your Oculus Quest or place your Oculus Quest in your knapsack. It's portable. It's ready to go. Oculus Quest allows you to train with a hologram in virtual reality. SetVR is not a teaching program. The teaching program is what you get from your dojos and senseis. SetVR allows a platform so you may practice your skill and apply your skills at your own time, your own pace, and in your own environment. The training is similar to what boxers do. You may have heard of the program that boxers use. It's called shadow boxing. Boxers use shadow boxing as a form of physical exercise or training in which you move your hands and feet as if you were boxing. SetVR is not meant to replace where you train or where you acquire your skill. It's self-defense, self-improvement when there is no partner around to train with. It's portable, flexible in regards to time and environment, where you are, whenever you are, whenever you want to train. It improves muscle memory, improves eye and hand coordination, improves reaction time to a stimulus, and you can also consider it as an aerobic exercise with health benefits. It allows you to practice your movements in circular, angular, and linear motion. Is there any questions in regards to this program that we have here?
Well, I have a question just for you, Doctor. Please explain to our listeners who you are and your background a little bit, who you train with, and what makes you, a component of introducing this concept to the world along with the Fort Crowder Museum. Kind of introduce yourself to my listeners.
Okay. My name is Dr. Reginald Lee. I'm a primary care physician. I've been in medicine for many years. I graduated in 1986. My training in martial arts started when I was 8 years old in Chinatown, in Philadelphia, Chinatown. I studied Kung Fu in the Hip Sing Association in Philadelphia. I studied Hungar, Wing Chun, Aikido. Subsequently, thereafter, I was fortunate enough to meet Sensei Richard Wigginton. For over 10 years, or almost 20 years, I've trained with him. I received my fifth degree black belt from Richard Wigginton himself before, unfortunately, he had passed away a few years ago. I'm a physician in primary care. What I've done was incorporate my skills in medicine in regards to applying it to martial arts. As you know, in regards to martial arts, as any martial arts practitioner, in order to practice and to understand martial arts, you have to know the body and how it functions. You have to understand the structure and function of the body in order to apply the use of what you know in regards to neutralizing an attacker or an opponent, which I have incorporated that in regards to this program. Any other questions you might want to ask?
Any of my listeners
out there?
AJ, you got a question?
Dr. Lee, how are you?
Yes, how are you doing, sir?
Very good. You know, my landlord for my school, it's kind of funny you're talking about basically pressure points and where to direct the target areas.
Exactly.
My landlord took a spill a couple weeks back. And then, long story short, he ended up getting a blood clot in his lungs. And he almost died from it. And it was from where he was hit on the chest when he fell. He fell on a curb. So, you know, pressure points and where you direct hits and when you train, you know, that's very ingenious that you're incorporating that into your program.
Yes.
Well, here's the thing, AJ. It's not just the hologram, but the idea about building something around the hologram to teach people about the history journals. And we'll talk about that later into the shows. But as we go along week by week, Dr. Lee will introduce more of the concept and more of the idea so people will be educated more when it does actually come out and people can actually use it. So, Dr. Lee, thank you so much for your time and your effort, and thank you for being on the front line and taking care of all these incredible people that are, you know, going through this terrible disease. God bless you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you, Dr. Lee. We'll see you
next week when you can explain a bit more. AJ, that's a heck of a guy there. Now, listen, I've got a great show, but before I introduce one of my special guests, who is incredible, I've got to introduce a very, very special guest. I call him, in fact, he's so special, I call him Uncle. He's my Uncle Jerry Smith. Uncle Jerry, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Now, listen, okay. For people who don't know who you are, just show them that you're Joe Lewis' student and you're a professor. But the reason why I want you on the air is that we've got a very special guest tonight. You know, we got two special guests, but one of them is like a son to you. And I want you to introduce him. I'm talking about world champion Danny Lopez. Go ahead.
I want to start by saying that I started to work with Danny when he was either 15 or 16 years old. And even at that time, he was a very, very special student. And he went on to become a world champion. He's actually worked in many movies. He's a stuntman and fight choreographer. He's a color commentator for one of the fight leagues and a striking coach for a lot of the UFC fighters. In other words, what I'm saying is Danny Lopez has always been an amazing Renaissance man. And I just can't tell you guys enough about how amazing this man is. I love him. I've worked with him for so long. I mean, as one of his teachers early on in martial arts. And Danny now is works on creating. He's written a screenplay, which he's adopting, turning into a movie. He's just an amazing human being, and I love him so much. There's not very much. I can't say very much more except for you in for a very special guest. This guy's a color commentator for fight leagues in Los Angeles, and very articulate and super, super, super smart. Danny Lopez.
Now, I've got to plug you a little bit more, too. You know, we had Dr. Lee on a little earlier. Part of the vision that we have is to build portals, and these portals are where you can go into portals, and you can walk in and learn everything there is about the history of people. Now, we picked out people like Rick Williamson, Mike Stone, Alan Steen, Jim Harrison, and Professor Jerry Smith. Now, Jerry, what's really cool about this is that, you know, you've been around a long time, and you've seen a lot of stuff. In fact, you actually used to work for Blah Blah Magazine, didn't you? What did you do for Blah Blah Magazine?
Yeah, I was hired out of college to work at Black Belt Magazine. I think I was there for about 7 years, and I was a graphic designer, and I loved it. I got a chance to anyone who's ever been of any note in martial arts has come through Black Belt Magazine. So I got to meet everybody. I knew Mike Stone, Chuck Norris.
Bruce Wayne.
You know, of course, my mentor, Joe Louis. And, okay, the great Bruce Lee. I mean, it was Bruce Lee. Mito Uyara owned Black Belt Magazine, and Bruce Lee was his private instructor. So Bruce Lee was up at the magazine all the time.
Now,
so whenever Bruce came.
Special. You did something last year very special for the Sport Car Museum. You had something very special from your heart that you donated to the Sport Car Museum from your instructor. Can you share that with my listeners, what you did last year in Las Vegas?
Yes, I did. Years ago, I was presented with the black belt from Joe Louis. This is back in 68, 69, so that's how far it goes back. I think Joe was training with Bruce at the time. And I went to a seminar, and I was so embarrassed. I left my black belt at home, and I didn't want to tell Joe I had left my black belt. And Joe said, "Well, don't worry about it, Jerry. I always carry an extra." He said, "You are one of my black belts, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah, I would like to think that I am." And he threw me this belt that I actually wore this belt, only belt I ever wore. He gave it to me, one of his belts, for at least, I would say, well, we're going on a 50-year anniversary, so the belt's got to be at least 50 years old. And I presented that belt to Professor Lee, and he has it in the Sports Karate Museum, from what I understand.
I got you on the air. Why would you, I mean, come on, seriously. I'm just a guy from Hawaii that had a dream, but why would you give me something as precious as Joe Louis' black belt, Uncle Jerry? Why would you do that?
Well, after talking to you and spending time and realize that we knew so many of the same people, there was another, you know, I won't go into any detail, but there was another martial arts museum that wanted the belt. But after meeting the people, I wasn't really, I didn't think that was where it should be. But after talking to you, I knew that was exactly where it was supposed to be. And
well,
I'm just so happy that
I promise you won't go nowhere, because I'm going to introduce Mr. Lopez and the other special fighter. And I want to listen. I want all you three to give me your opinion, plus with AJ. So don't go nowhere. Don't go nowhere, Uncle Jerry. Please don't go nowhere, okay?
I won't.
Thank you. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, he introduced one of my very special guests tonight, world champion, Danny Lopez. Danny, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir. I'm right here.
Wow. Thank you for being on the show tonight, Danny. And I'm going to introduce the other special fighter, and then I'm going to talk to all three of you separately, okay? Just bear with me. The other special fighter I have tonight, he wasn't a full contact fighter, but he was one of the best point fighters that we ever had. He beat almost everybody. We're talking about Dr. Speed, Marty Kabakas. Marty, are you there?
I am, sir. How are you?
I'm so excited to have Danny Lopez and Marty Kabakas and Jerry Smith on the air on the same program. That's exciting. AJ, I'm excited. Can you tell?
I do. How are you, Dr.
Steve? Well, I'm excited. This is exciting me. So I'm going to take one at a time. We already talked to Jerry a little bit. So, Danny, it's your turn. Tell me how you got started and maybe your first world championship fight to win that first world championship. Tell me a little bit about how you got going.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say one of the biggest thrills for me as a student is finding favor in my instructor's eyes, because that's the goal. I think very few times a student takes the type of pride in wanting to make sure that their instructors are recognized for the achievements that they have made in their careers as martial artists. And I'm so glad that Jerry, you know, is on the show with me, because I've done my entire life. All I ever wanted to do was to do right by the people that took time to teach me my craft. and to take time to educate me. Jerry has never charged me a penny for any lessons. He was always there like a father figure, as a close friend, and I'm just so proud that we're on the show together. It's an honor for me, and it caught me by surprise, but in a good way. Anyway,
well,
going back to your question, I got started in the martial arts basically out of necessity. I grew up in Wilmington, California, which was divided between the east and west side, Wimas, which was a Mexican gang territory. And being Puerto Rican, I didn't belong to either side, but I was always catching hell from every direction. So I took up the martial arts as a form of defending myself. And the more I got into it, the more I realized that I really enjoyed it. It wasn't just as a fighting aspect of it, but I wanted to pursue it from the sport part of it, you know. And I had received the first degree black belt in Salem Fu, which was a kung fu style. But when I went into, and I did really good in kata because it was a soft style. But when it came to fighting, I was getting eaten alive because kung fu didn't lend itself for tournament fighting, let's put it that way. And I had to learn new tricks, and I had to learn a new way of looking at the fight game as a whole, because kung fu, the style I took, was more for really, you know, to hurt somebody on the streets, and it wasn't for tournament style. It was more for really hurting somebody. And so I met a gentleman named Lenny Whirlwind Ferguson. I can't remember his name now because he's changed. But I think it's Latif, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, Lenny at that time was a very flashy, colorful fighter. And I started admiring him from afar and trying to mimic what he was doing. I got up enough courage. I spoke with him. We became friends, and he introduced me to Jerry. And when I met Jerry, I knew instantly. At that time, you know, we're talking about history, but at that time it was back in the early 70s. I believe it was 74, 75. But in that time period, the full contact had just barely started making its way into the history books. And there wasn't a whole lot of full contact fighters. There wasn't a whole lot of fighters, period. But if you wanted to be a successful fighter.
That's the thing I'm going to talk about tonight, Danny. Danny, I want to talk, when I introduce Marty here in a minute, I'm going to compare full contact and point fighting to this. That's really cool. Now, Marty, you there?
Yes, sir. Yes, I am.
Okay, I want to introduce you the proper way. Now, Marty, you're a Yankee, first of all. I got no offense against you. I love you. But you're a Yankee. Okay.
I love you too.
And but anyway, you're like one of my best friends, because we go back a long time with a mutual instructor named James Durant, Mr. Durant. And I remember sitting with you in a Denny's at 2 o'clock in the morning, and we're talking about Mr. Durant and all the crazy things that he put us through. Now, explain to my listeners some of your point fighting accolades, some bullet points, and you fought people like Steve Nasty Anderson. A lot of, in fact, you know what? Let me say this. I have your belt that you beat Nasty for at the museum that you donated to the museum. Tell me about that fight, and tell me about some of the accolades that you've done, Marty.
Well, let me say first and foremost, a deep debt of gratitude to the great Steve Nasty Anderson. He was always an inspiration of mine. And we traveled together. He actually lived with me for a period of time in Buffalo. We trained together. And a deep debt of gratitude and respect and admiration. I fought Steve in 1991 at the Canadian National Gold Belt Championships, which was in Scarborough, Ontario. The promoter was Kiyoshi Theo Bell, and it was a phenomenal tournament. Well over 1,000 competitors, the likes of Jason Borelli, Trevor Nash, Nasty, myself, and a host of other people. It was always a very, very competitive tournament throughout the years. And I actually, Nasty was the defending champ that day, and I fought a division of about 30 people in my division. And then I had to fight the other divisional winners because it was the overall grand championship, not just like some of the tournaments that do the middleweight or lightweight grand. This was for the overall. And we fought two rounds, and it was one of my most cherished wins. I was really it was
cool.
Kind of
yeah.
The real moment because of the admiration I always have for him. And throughout the
cool.
years,
that's what I wanted to establish tonight. That I've got three badasses on the line, okay? I'm with Jerry, Danny Lopez, and Marty. Come on, guys. I'm going to ask a question, and then one at a time you guys answer it, okay? Here we go. Here's the
mm-hmm.
question. Now, the big
Fire
step in the 70s was, because I know I hated full contact. I hated being hit in the face. I hated it, but I enjoyed hitting people. But my point is, what's the big difference from a point fighter going into full contact, Danny? I mean, what was the main thing that a guy has to do to adjust to that type of more pressure? Because, you know, you got the guy really trying to hurt you on the other end in full contact, right?
Well, for me, it wasn't so much it was more about wanting to be the best. There was something that just drove me to want to be better each time. And point tournament fighting was great. I won quite a few tournaments before turning pro, but the thing that really motivated me and moved me was the fact that, okay, you might be quicker than me if you outpointed me with a kick, but was that kick strong enough to take me out? Will you still be there when I absorb that kick and come forward and hit you with a right cross and a left hook? Are you going to still be in front of me? That was the thing that, you know, that's what motivated
Good
me
point.
To keep going was the fact that, you know, point tournament was fine if you want to prove to the world you were the quickest. You know, that might work, but
that's a great answer, 12 rounds, or to go more rounds
and still be there standing up in front of your opponent and have your hands raised while he's on the canvas, that's a whole nother ballgame.
Right, that's a good answer. Now, Uncle Jerry, okay.
Oh,
what,
yeah.
What was the big difference? Because you experienced both in the experience of Joe Louis era. What was the big difference to somebody like your great fighter Jim Eccles to fight a guy like Bill Wallace? I mean, what was it? What did you make him to teach them?
I had two students that fight. I had one of my students actually beat Wallace when Wallace was undefeated. And another one of my students fought him for the middleweight championship of the world in Las Vegas. But to get back to what Danny just said, the thing for me, the reason why I followed Jill into full contact, was that in a sports karate tournament, the whole event is based on three judges or four judges, and they have to agree on something. You know, they have to agree on a point. Usually you can't get four men to agree on anything. But what full contact takes that collusion part of it out of it. You two men are in
Good
a
point.
Ring and they fight, and one guy takes away. Same thing as Danny just said. You know, it, bottom line, you know that you won. You know, it's the greatest one-on-one sport outside of boxing that exists in mixed martial
Good
combat
point,
fighting.
Good point. Yeah, I like that. That's great. Now, Marty, I got to
ask
you, because you're like me, you're a point fighter. And I tried full contact three times, but like I said, I did not get hit in the face. And now, did you ever have an opportunity to get in the ring with somebody, have someone beat the crap out of you, like full contact, like Danny and Jerry did?
Actually, I was remain to this day undefeated in full contact, and at Nasty Anderson's event that he held in Ottawa, Ontario, it was called Night at the Fights, I actually knocked out John LaRota, who was the world champion from Ottawa, and it was themed as a full contact point style tournament where you could make full contact and, you know, using points that point techniques that are customarily point techniques. But as a matter of fact, Jason Borelli was the center referee that night. And actually scored a knockout on John Lagoda.
Let's talk about this a minute. Marty, let's talk about this a minute, about the other two guys. Now, I come from a style called Kyokushin, which is full contact to the body and no groin strikes, but no, you know, I mean, it's full contact as far as karate goes. Now, getting in the ring with somebody and for having 10 rounds of that guy beating the shit out of my language. Beating the crap out of you, and every time he comes out, if he's trained harder, if he's got more tenacity, or in some cases more heart, and he comes out every round to knock you out, that's a it's a different thing from a 2 minute full contact fight.
Oh, sure. Well, as you know, I trained one of my students, Kevin Rozier, went on to be the world full-contact kickboxing champ.
Sure.
I have TJ the Hitman Sumler, who is a Bellator fighter and cage fighter, and I kickbox with my guys that I train. So I'm very adept in the realm of doing quite a few rounds in a session with them.
Marty, excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm the guy that took Jen Eyes and baseball bats from Durant, hit me in the head, and I didn't draw my sword properly. So I've had full contact experience too, buddy.
Well,
now, Danny
I will say,
and Jerry,
yes.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I will say that by being a student of the 70s karate, the school that I belong to, Gen Nippon Academy of Karate Do, we used to spar full contact with no equipment on. There was no safety equipment at all. And it included facial shots. So I was always, I kind of cut my teeth doing that kind of stuff, no pun intended. Getting kicked in the face, full force punch in the face. So anybody that is familiar with my style of point fighting, I shy away from the touch and get in there and, try to make leave nothing up to imagination of, the judges as to what they saw and kind of let the opponent acknowledge it. So I'm not in approval of a lot of what passes for a point nowadays. I believe there should be a functionality to the technique, no matter, whether you're fighting full contact or point fighting. I think it has to be a legitimate technique with focus. So, I'm kind of old school when it comes to that.
Sure. Now, Danny,
Professor Lee,
and Uncle Jerry.
Professor Lee, can I make a comment, please?
Yes, sir.
I want people to know that my students, the great Danny Magic Lopez, were great, absolutely great tournament fighters as well. As a matter of fact, I was captain of the team, of the international team that won the international team championships 3 years in a row, and that's fighting the NARS team, the Japanese team from the West Coast. So we could fight both ways. No doubt about that.
Okay,
yes,
I'm gonna put you and Danny on the spot for a minute. Danny,
uh-huh.
Tell me your best
knockout
technique that you like to throw. What was your best technique you like to throw? You answer that first. What was your personal technique that Danny Lopez liked to throw?
My spinning heel kick.
Okay. Now, who taught you that kick?
I learned it from Seelum Fu, but all the different styles that I've worked with, I've seen it applied different ways. And
I want to ask you now. What did Jerry Smith, Uncle Jerry Smith, what did he do to enhance that spinning wheel kick for you? What did he do to enhance it for you?
Well, he basically taught me the mechanics of fighting. It's one thing to learn how to throw a kick because, like they say, everybody looks good hitting a heavy bag. It's like, Richard Pryor said, I look good in the gym. It was in the ring that I had my problems. a lot of guys, they learn how to throw the punch, but there's three facets of throwing a punch. First of all, you got to know how to throw the punch. Secondly, you got to know when to throw the punch. And then thirdly, you got to know where to throw that punch. And if you lock in on all three of those, then yeah, you got a recipe for success.
Okay. Now, Uncle Jerry, when you taught him to enhance that spinning wheel kick, what was the main key and ingredient to teach him to focus, the kini, to hit it with power? What did you emphasize on?
Well, one of the main thing was learning the 25 basic fighting principles from Joe, understanding critical distance, independent movement, broken rhythm, indirect angle. It was like getting a master class in combat fighting. And Danny was magic from the moment I laid eyes on him. And I had to kind of calm him down a little bit because he was leaping in the air and throwing, spinning, flying back kicks. He was amazing. And he always surprised. No matter what I taught him and how much I taught him, he always surprised me in the ring. I mean, the way that he fought and what he did. He was very, very – I know it sounds like I'm blowing a lot of smoke, but I can't blow enough. You know, Danny –
Well, you're a professor. You're supposed to blow a lot of smoke, sir. God bless you. God bless you. Now, Marty, what was your favorite technique as a point fighter? You know, because you won a lot of fights, buddy. I know. Okay, I can brag about you a bit. Okay, what was your favorite technique?
I would say to this day, my favorite technique when I compete is probably the back fist reverse punch blitz or the vertical axe kick followed by the back fist reverse punch. Those are kind of my bread and butter techniques that I enjoy doing.
Okay. Well, let's educate people a little bit. I remember when someone saw me get into a fight at the club one night, and came up to me and says, "Listen, you kick pretty good, but can you hit somebody with those hands?" And really, I was young and ignorant. And I thought it was a cut down. And I said, "Sure." So he invited me to a boxing gym. And I went there and I learned how to do a jab, a right cross, a left hook, and an uppercut. And then I showed him, you know, some karate techniques. And he said, "Okay, look. The jab would be the same as a backhand. The right cross would be the same as a reverse punch. And the uppercut would be the same as an elbow strike. And the left hook would be the same as a ridge hand." So I incorporated boxing techniques into karate and karate into boxing. And, you know, I'm not bragging. I just became a scrappy guy. You know, can you guys understand that? Mixing boxing and karate together?
Mm-hmm. Of course, man. That's what mixed martial arts is, of course.
Well, the only thing I couldn't get by with was the uppercut. I turned it down elbow. I'd always elbow instead of throwing a punch. And the judges didn't like that. They said that would be excessive. So,
hey, Professor, it's Wolverine. I just wanted to holler at you real quick, let you know I was on
Wolverine.
There.
Wolverine! How's the movie going?
It's going great, man. The fight scenes tonight was off the chain, and the script read was off the chain. It's all coming together good. Everything's in the storyboarding phase. Talk to SAG. They're getting ready to give us a representative and cut us loose, so we should be getting a green light to start filming sometime here in June, around the 1st of June.
Well, let's plug it a little bit. This is called The Coward. And it's a movie that's produced by Mr. Philip Hyatt, directed by Mr. Lance Britt, starring Mark Stone, Dean Pyles, and you've got a crew. You got A.J. Perry. You got Guy Dunn. You got Ryan George. You got Ronald George. You got Rob Buckland. You got Dan Severn. Michael DePasquale Jr. Man, you got Captain Sewell. You've got a lot of cool people, man.
I got Ernest Miller.
You got Alan Kelly. Who?
Yeah. I got Ernest Miller and Romail.
Who?
Romail.
Oh, yeah, Romail Gargol.
Yeah.
Romail Gargol. It's incredible, the people that – Mark Shuey, the cane master.
Mark Shuey.
I mean, yeah. It's amazing. And The Coward is not like other bully movies. It's got a different concept, a different approach. And Mark Stone, I'm going to say it on there, Mark Stone is a badass do. Very humble. Very humble. But he's a bad, bad dude. Marty Stone is a bad dude. You heard it directly from the professor. So, Marty, Uncle Jerry,
yes,
and Danny Lopez, be looking for the coward in 2021. And you'll start Dean Piles, my co-host, along with A.J. Perry, who co-hosts with me. A.J., welcome to the movies, buddy.
You know, it's quite
yeah.
an honor. You know, one different angle on this movie is that the bullying involves an adult, and it goes into the angles of how it affects the people around them. So it's really an interesting
right.
script.
I know. I'm excited about it because, you know, Dean not only is – I got to brag about it a little bit because he won't brag about himself, so I'll brag about him. He's not only a four-time NASCAR world champion, he is also my student, a student of Joe Lewis's, and he's now I adopted him. But he wrote the script. He's the stunt coordinator. He's the guy that's making things happen for all these other people. Dean Piles is not only a real martial artist. He's a real guy that really cares about the future of martial arts. He's only one of the directors of the Fort Clyde Museum. He's a history general. You know, he's an amazing person. Did I say enough, Dean? Did I say enough about you?
Yeah, that's great. Rob asked me tonight when we got off of the thing, he asked me, was I going to go back and compete? Because I said something about competing when we hung up tonight. And he said, well, you've only got 44 world titles. Are you going to make it even 50? I said, well, I may go back and make it even 50, then go back and make some more movies, and then I'll go back to competing again when I'm 60. So we might do that.
Dean, I don't give a crap if you come back and compete again. I want you at least to hit somebody. So if you come back, I want you to fight in one of those divisions, okay? And hit somebody.
Well,
please.
I'm sure the way people are, you know, I went ahead and told, you know, Philip to go ahead and put back some we're getting sued money because he asked me, he said, well, why would I put back money in case we get sued? I said, because I'm not going to be like Van Damme and some of them. When some of these other guys come calling and say that we're not for real, I'm going to hop on an airplane, I'm going to fly to where they live, and I'm going to break their jaw because that's what Joe Lewis would want me to do, and that's what I'm going to do straight out the gate. So we need to go ahead and have some money to pay somebody because somebody's going to get sued because we've got the best group of real martial artists that I don't think there's ever been a movie that's had such a talented group of martial artists in it, and you know I'm not going to listen to their anybody's shenanigans putting any of the people in.
Well, I know the one
as
thing that Mr. Lewis. I know the one thing that Mr. Lewis and I have talked to is that expect Murphy's Law. What's going to happen will happen, and if you're not expecting it, it kicks your butt. So God bless you. You know, you're thinking ahead, and no matter if it's good, bad, or ugly, it doesn't matter. You're thinking ahead. And that's knowing what Murphy's Law is going to do. So thank you for being on the air again. And I'm looking for you to come back permanently after the movie. Okay?
Yeah,
AJ's
yeah.
AJ's doing a good job while you're gone, though. AJ's doing a good job.
Yeah,
he's
doing good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
AJ, we're talking about you now.
He's awesome.
Okay. Okay, Marty and Professor and Danny Lopez. Okay, I got another question for you. Now, fighting's fighting, okay? You want to hit the guy so he doesn't get back up. Now, what is the secret? I'll start with Uncle Jerry first. Thinking about teaching a fighter to become a better fighter. What's the main ingredient to make a fighter a better fighter, Uncle Jerry?
Well, I can answer that very distinctly. If you have given the fighter the mechanics and the technique to believe in those techniques. Once you get a fighter to a point to where he can actually understand distance, timing, and can actually believe in the technique. Because a lot of people learn the technique, but they're not fighters. They're not willing to step in the pocket and actually exchange. I never had that problem with Danny Lopez. I couldn't keep him out of the pocket, let alone. And So it's getting the fighter to believe in himself. So remember, there's a physical, a mechanical, technical, and academic level in fighting. And once and those levels create a chain. And if there's a break in that chain, if there's a weak point, there's going to be a weak point in the performance. But if everything, if each of those levels are strong, you're going to get a very effective output. And if you can get your fighter, you can always tell when your fighter actually believes. That's when the magic happens. The magic happens when the fighter believes in himself and can move in and actually take advantage of the mechanics that you've taught him.
Well, you sound like a professor. I love it. I love it. Now, Danny, I'm going to ask you a question. Okay. When you go in the ring with somebody, you got 5 rounds, 6 rounds, 10-round fight. What's your mindset to knocking out in the beginning or to build up to the knockout?
It's a huge mistake to walk in the ring and think that you're going to knock out a person in the first, second, or third round unless you really know this fighter. The game plan really is to do everything correctly. You know, going back to that question you were talking about, when I train my fighters, I always taught my fighters that every one thing that you do correctly eliminates an opportunity for your opponent to hurt you. So if you have good habits to begin with, they're hard to break the further along you go into your career. But if you start off with a lot of bad habits, they're hard to break. And usually you're going to suffer that until you learn that inside the ring, you know. But going back again, when you're fighting a 10-round fight, you got to expect always that even though you're going to land the punches, you don't expect that guy to go down. But once you do got him hurt, then you better go after him like you're a shark smelling blood. And then that's usually going to be your outcome at that point. But I never went into any fight thinking I'm going to knock this guy in the first round or I'm going to take him into the later rounds. It's always the same mindset. I'm going to make him pay for every one of his mistakes. And when the knockout comes, I'll know.
Gary, can I tell you something that's amazing that you may not have known? Did you know that Danny Lopez was Roberto Duran's sparring partner? When
wow.
he fought
the man of stone, hands of stone.
Yeah,
David Moore.
That is how good Danny Lopez was. He was
wow.
The
Marty,
sparring
you hear that?
For...
Yes, sir.
That's cool.
I had the opportunity to train with Mark Mahone, who was the Marine Corps heavyweight champion. I was a sparring partner for Marvin Camel, who was the cruiserweight, the WBC cruiserweight world champion. I had the opportunity to be a sparring partner for Jeff McCracken,
wow.
who actually went 10 rounds with Tommy Hearns. So I've had my Juanito Perez's brother as well, Tomas Perez.
Well, this is exciting. I've got to ask you guys an important question. This is for all three of you. Because all three of you are history generals in the Sports Fighting Museum. So I'm going to ask all three of the same question, and then we'll answer it separately. Okay? Here it is. Keeping the history alive and honoring people like Jerry Smith and Joe Louis and Mr. Norris and other people, and keeping the history alive and keeping the full karate alive, particularly in America, because you're a history journal, how important is that for that new generation to understand a Joe Louis or Jerry Smith or you know, Chuck Norris or Gene LaBelle, or these guys who laid the groundwork for everything. You go first, Uncle Jerry. Why is it important to be a part of this Sport Karate Museum?
It is so important because there are so many fighters out there that have given blood and everything that they have that a lot of people don't know that have just kind of fought, you know, guys like Gary Goodman and Ernest Russell and all these great fighters, and no, you know, and the fact that we have this Martial Arts History Museum now, we can honor those guys. It's, you know, it would be, I have already committed for the rest of my life to making sure that those guys, that people know who the Danny Lopez's were and the guys. So that That's what I have to say. There's so many people who've given so much.
General, as a history general for the Sport Karate Museum, it's very important, and we're very proud that you're part of the first six portals that we'll do for the hologram with Dr. Lee and Rich Shanahan. We appreciate you so much. Now, Danny, I got to ask you, because, you know, you being a fighter and an amazing individual, how important is it that you're part of the Sport Karate Museum, a history general, and a mentor for what we do? How important is it?
For me, it's not important at all. I don't want to feel. Yeah, I still feel like the little kid looking up to the Jerry Smith. You know what I mean? But I know how important it is for that legacy to remain, because people today, as big as UFC have gotten, nobody seems to understand that the guys who paved the road before them were the Jerry Smith, were the Chuck Norris,
Amen.
Were the you know, those guys that paved that road before, even before me, because I was always the new kid on the block afterwards, you know.
You're an old man now, Danny. Now you're an old man.
I still feel like that little kid who was so enthusiastic, wanting to train with guys like Howard Jackson, so enthusiastic that I was so encouraged when I was invited to Chuck Norris's house to work out with Chuck Norris. I'm still in all of those things, and I'm I don't say them to brag. I say them because I'm so proud of the fact that I was included in that group. You know, to be included in that group to me is awesome. You know,
that's exciting. Now, Marty, I got to ask you, because you look as a
professional
fighter.
I had a question.
Okay, 1 second. I'm talking to Marty now. Marty, how important is it to be a part of the Sport Karate Museum? And AJ, he has a question for you, too. Go ahead. How important is it?
Well, it's extremely important. It's one of my most cherished honors. I hold it near and dear to my heart. And with that induction comes an extreme debt of gratitude, which I will always try to repay by contributing positively to the sport. And at the same time, you know, I like to influence the younger generation to embrace, you know, the importance of this as our generation has, so that it'll perpetuate and carry on, you know, for generations to come. I never want the young people to think that it's just about having their few seasons of competition and then move on to something else. You know, the common denominator with our generation is we've been doing it for a long time, and we realize it's so much more than just our own personal gains and the competitive aspect. It's the preservation of competition and of the history of sport karate. So it's extremely important to me, and I thank you for the opportunity.
I wanted to clarify something before I hang up, Gary. Yeah. I didn't want to make it sound like to me it wasn't important. What is important is the preservation of that history, not so much because I'm included into it, but because of the history itself.
You're so humble, Daddy. Thank you. God bless you. You're very humble.
I just wanted to clarify that. I didn't want anybody to think that I was knocking the history of this at all.
Well, you're
a
great champion. AJ, you got a question for Marty?
Yeah, before that, when they were talking about, you know, preserving the history, you know, you're getting the new generation of students in, and a lot of these new, you know, these young kids, they don't know who the fighters from the 60s and 70s were. And this, with the museum, helps preserve that history and help educate them in the future. So that's why it's really important, and to, you know, to cherish that culture.
But Dr. Lee, are you still there, Dr. Lee? Dr. Lee, did you hang up? I wanted him to hear.
I got a question for Marty.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Marty, go ahead.
You know, we've known each other a long time. You know, you're a phenomenal fighter. You give tremendous seminars also,
and you know, free sparring.
But the Great Lakes area, you know, Buffalo, you know, I'm just down the road from you, actually, in Cleveland. And you had Erie, Pennsylvania, where Billy Blanks came from, the whole Great Lakes area. There were some really good fighters. Other than Nasty Anderson.
Monster Man.
Monster Man Eddie. Right? Who was your most memorable fight other than Nasty Anderson?
Well, I fought thus far to date, and I always kind of try to refrain from name. You know, it's a funny thing because I fought Nasty, I fought the great Gerald Dawson, Gaffar Adam, Alberto Montron, David Butcher Wilson. I fought just about EJ Greer, everybody.
And K.A., Stephen Thompson.
You know, I fought K.A. To date, I've defeated 30 world champions. So that, you know, I would say that as much as I could cite one specific fight as being most memorable, every one of them was memorable because when you're fighting people of that caliber, they didn't get to where they're at from, you know, without having a huge skill set. So, you know, each one was memorable, and profound respect for each and every person that I've ever stepped in the ring with, because, you know, there's so many phenomenal people out there. I could go on and on, and, you know, and I thank each and every one of them for inspiring me.
You know what, Marty, you know what? I got four of them on the show tonight, you and AJ.
Yes, sir.
Danny and Uncle Jerry. Well, so we got few minutes, so I got to ask this question. Uncle Jerry, okay, I'm going to ask you. Can you share with the listeners maybe some hope of what's going to happen after this virus thing? I mean, what's going to happen in the martial arts schools, and how could someone, you know, be positive after something like this happened? Can you give maybe a little insight of wisdom?
Answer that question again. I missed the first part of it.
Okay. Can you give some wisdom to what a martial arts instructor can do to, you know, handle this crisis that martial arts schools will be closing and, you know, there'll be new emergence in the martial arts? You've been around forever. The only reason I'm asking you this question is because you have been around forever.
Eventually this coronavirus is going to go away, and we'll be able to. Right now, we're in kind of a transition because you can't have more than four or five people together in one place. That kind of totally defeats the purpose of training in martial arts. But I think that what instructors can do is they can actually become personal trainers to their students. And get, you know, give them a curriculum and different techniques and mechanics to work on until we get past this point that we're going through right now. And I'm looking forward to actually working on that. I'm not going to go into that. But anyway, I think once we get past this coronavirus.
Yes, sir. Wise words. Now, Danny, I got to ask you, you got maybe some up-and-coming fighters who are listening to our show, and they knew that Danny Lopez was going to be on the show tonight. What would you tell, or what would you suggest these up-and-coming fighters, what they need to do to be known or get to be known in today in 2020? What would advice would you give them?
Repeat that last part, because I didn't...
Okay.
I understood part
what
of it,
advice?
But...
What advice could you give to a fighter who might be listening tonight, knowing that I'm talking to the great Danny Lopez? And what would you tell them? What would they have to do to become a good fighter, and, you know, just to become a better fighter? What would you suggest to them?
You know, there's a fine line between being a decent fighter and being a great fighter, and the movements are minute. It's hard to answer that question. I mean, I can explain it to you this way. Staying within the range, so you don't have to – you know, when you attack a fighter, you have to work your way into him. And if he attacks you, you just make a minute movement where you're out of his range but still in the pocket where you can counterpunch him. The big mistake that a lot of fighters make is you attack me, I back off. I attack you, you back off, and it turns into a track meet instead of a fight. And if they do get out of range, it takes them that much longer to get back into range. And so by staying in the pocket and making those little small head movements, you know, you always hear this comment about keeping punches short and sweet.
big looping punches is because they're so far out of range, they got to leap back in to try to make contact with their opponent. But if they stay in the pocket, their punches can't be anything but short and crisp punches. But, you know, fighters nowadays, that's what I try to teach them, is this, to be able to counterpunch and be able to stay inside the pocket. Because once you're inside the pocket and you know that your opponent can't hurt you, there's no greater feeling.
Well, I want to tell you something. This means so much for you guys to be on the show tonight. And we've been on the show for an hour. We covered a lot of stuff. And so we've had the great A.J. Perry, okay, from Cleveland, Ohio, been my co-host. We've had the great Marty Kavakis, Dr. Steve, and world champion Jay Lopez, and Professor Jerry Smith. Now, this has been an amazing show. And I hate for it to end, guys, but I've got to, you know, wrap it up. And I want to say thank you so much. So you guys promise me you'll come back later on, maybe?
Oh, yes.
Of course.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for having me.
Well, don't forget, in September the 25th and 26th, we're going to be doing the Celebrity Roast in Houston, Texas, and also the Texas Martial Arts Hall of Fame. And then November 6th and 7th, we'll be in Greenville, South Carolina, honoring Sam Chapman and the Marine Corps, Uncle Jerry. We'll be honoring all the Marines, like Colonel Phil Torres and Colonel Ike Slaughter, and I mean, a lot of cool people, Craig Lightfoot, Colonel Steve Vitale, Danny Lane, Danny McCall, A.J. Perry. He's going to be there. Yeah. We got
John Legato.
Cool people coming in.
John Legato also.
Yeah. Yes. We got some amazing summit.
Hey, Professor Lee.
Yes, sir.
This is Jerry. Well, I want to thank you for Professor Lee, I want to thank you for an amazing show. Thank you so much. This was fantastic.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate
you
so much. You guys,
thank you very
you
much.
Guys, all you guys nice together job. Makes this talk. It's Christmas, and it's Christmas morning, and I opened all the presents that I've asked for. You guys really make me feel good. And remember, everybody can go to www.sportkaratemuseumarchives.com, and you'll find out more information about the museum. And please, look up Jerry Smith in Las Vegas and Danny Lopez in California and A.J. Perry in Ohio and golly bum, Marty, Kavakis, Dr. Steve. You're a damn Yankee. Where are you from, Marty? What town? What city?
Buffalo, New York.
See, you are a damn Yankee.
Yes, sir. Stay almost safe, a Canadian. Everybody. I'm a half a mile away from Canada.
Well, just stay safe. Okay.
Thank you.
God
Thank
bless you.
You
guys. On behalf of the Sport Karate Museum and the AMAA Pioneers and Masters Radio Network, we'll see you guys real soon. And we'll be on the air on the podcast here in a few minutes. And thank you for listening, everybody. We'll see you
next
week.
Thank you, and God bless
Dr.
everybody.
Keith Yates.
Take
God
care.
Bless. We'll be Dr.
Good
Keith
night.
Yates. And we'll be talking about the More Arabs of History General book. And thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you for 5 years of being in your home. God bless everybody. Be safe. And as we always say,
thank you.
Mahalo.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.